everybody. What's going on? Welcome back to the Midnight Terrors podcast. This is another episode coming at you. My name is Kevin, and I'm here with a special guest co-host today, a good friend of the podcast. I've gone to see a couple TerrorVision screenings with him. He's been at the live events and a big supporter of the show. Please welcome Robert.
Hey, everybody. Nice
How you
to be
doing,
here.
man?
Thanks. I'm great. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a long time coming. It's good to have you on here finally. This is kind of you were planning to be on the show before, but at our winter live event, you nabbed the guest spot prize from the trivia at our live event there. So that kind of got the ball rolling for this episode to happen. But you've got some other episodes in the can that we're going to be doing. So, but it's nice to finally
cool.
have you on.
Yeah, absolutely. I love being here.
Yeah.
Fun.
And you're a big, you interact with a lot of people in the Facebook group as well. So if people are in the Midnight Terrors podcast Facebook group, they know you pretty well.
I think today I actually won some sort of Facebook fake trophy for having the best photo reaction to the snowfall that we had last night. I took my Jack Torrance figure and put him outside early yesterday before the snow started. And I went out every hour and recorded the progress. And now he looks officially like Jack Torrance at the end of The Shining.
Dude, I saw that. That was amazing. I wish there was a way for you to like preserve that.
Yeah, I should. I may have to try to make a video, a time lapse video out of it or something. But yeah.
Absolutely. So, did you put that in the Facebook group? I can't remember now.
One of the many. It feels like my social circle has exploded. There's Midnight Terrors, the Rockies. Absent Friends. There's a couple book clubs, etc. So yeah,
the Charleston Society of Horror.
Yes, all the nerdlings all together. I love it. and there's so much cross-pollination from one group to the next, which
absolutely
tells you a lot about our interests. So
absolutely, it's fantastic, man. I love it. We got a big year ahead of cool events coming up. So, but we'll start right here with an episode, with you as the guest co-host for MTP, but, you've listened to our show, Robert.
Yep.
So you know that when you're on the show for the first time, we got to put you in the hot seat real fast.
Sure.
So tell us real quick, how did you get your start into horror and what was your favorite scary movie or what is your favorite scary movie that kind of, left an impression on you?
This is going to come as a bit of a bender. I might be stressing the rules here, but hey, you said no rules. So
I did.
When I was a kid, I grew up in a small town. There was a local movie theater that would just show endless reruns of movies over and over again. Whatever they could afford that weekend would be the matinee. And I had a very much in the movie theater childhood. I fell in love with Willy Wonka, the original, the only Willy Wonka, Gene Wilder. Way back when, and even though that was technically a kid's movie, you cannot say that that movie, when you're a kid, doesn't on some level scare the living fuck out of you. Especially
absolutely.
The there's no earthly way of knowing that whole sequence. And then beyond that, I would say I've kind of always gravitated towards horror. I mentioned Jack Torrance earlier. The Shining is my absolute favorite horror film of all time, and this one that we're about to do is a close, by a hair, second place to The Shining.
Okay, so, I actually could not remember if the one we're talking about today was your number one or not. So that adds some clarity to that. But so when you got into horror, and then you started with Willy Wonka, which I would agree is also a terrifying movie.
Yeah.
Also not a weird choice because we've had The Wizard of Oz pop up on here as a movie that scared someone. E.T. was mentioned.
And actually that was another movie that was in heavy rotation when I was a child. I've probably seen Wizard of Oz as many times as I've seen Wonka, which is a scary number of times.
Yes. Yeah, Wonka was one of my favorites as a kid as well. But when you really jumped into horror, what was the movie that you can remember that like really scared the shit out of you for a while?
Well, again, I hate to have to bend a rule, but I've never been somebody like I'm a pretty firm agnostic, or I'm a hopeful, or I think maybe on some days I'm a hopeful atheist, I don't know. So when it comes to, like, I've never really believed in the supernatural. So supernatural horror is fun for me to watch, but I don't know that it, like, if you want to scare me, show me something that could realistically happen. And when I was 10, 11, 12, and yes, audience, I am way older than all of you. Somebody just told me when HBO was a thing and there were only a handful of movies on HBO, everybody that I knew said, "Oh, there's this great Burt Reynolds action flick. You'll love it. Just sit down and watch it." And that movie was Deliverance. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Deliverance, but something incredibly horrifying happens to a character in Deliverance. And it's something that could very much happen in real life. And it probably traumatized me and scared me more than anything else I've ever seen on a screen. So there you
Yeah,
go.
I have no, that's a hell of a pick for something to scare you. I have never seen it for because of its reputation. I don't know that I ever will, but I understand its place in cinema. So yeah, that's a new one.
Well, I'm here to break boundaries.
There you go. But thankfully, we're talking about something a lot more fun, at least in my book, today. So we're talking about what you have just confirmed is your close second favorite horror movie of all time. This one's also in my top 10. When you got the guest spot pass, I told you that you get to pick what movie we talk about. And thank you because you picked one of my all-time favorites as well with
Awesome.
American Werewolf in London or An American Werewolf in
Oh,
London.
heck, hell yeah.
From 1981, the just immortal classic. And this is very timely too, because when this is coming out, The New Wolfman is out as of about a week ago. So
This is also great.
yeah, we have an episode coming on that too, so I'll save my
Nice.
detailed thoughts. But yeah, you
Cool.
and I were talking. You said you liked that one a lot.
Yeah, I really did. I really did. But you know, when we were talking about werewolf movies, and I think I said The New Wolfman is probably my second favorite, but I'd forgotten, I'd completely glossed over Gingersnaps, which is an
Yeah.
amazing werewolf movie,
It's
and unlike any other werewolf movie made because it's a girl. So.
Yeah, I just saw that movie for the first time last summer, and it blew my mind how good it was.
It's really good, really good, amazing. And they made a trilogy of those, and the others are okay, but the first one is fantastic.
Sure. Well, yeah,
So,
I wanna watch the rest of them because Gingersnaps was really, really good, but
yeah.
I think that it's no secret to anyone on that listens to MTP that werewolves are my all-time favorite like horror creature.
Yeah.
I just can't get enough of them. And I mean, can you get much better than this movie? Just to
No, I
preview
don't
my
think you.
thoughts a little bit.
Yeah, no, I don't think you can. One question: if you, why werewolves? Why is that? Do you, is there any specific reason you can think of why you gravitate to werewolves more than anything?
I think someone asked me this before, and it's always a hard thing to put a pin on why they're my favorite horror creature, but I think honestly just the sheer aspect of the transformation and it being something that you can't really control, and it also being a bit of like a psychological journey as well as a physical transformation for the characters that are involved. Because you look at something like American Werewolf in London, and you've got, our main character here who doesn't want to be bad, but then you've got something like Bad Moon, where after a while the guy's just like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm a werewolf and I'm a bad guy now. Same thing with like Anthony Hopkins in the 2010 Wolfman and things like that. So there's a lot of different layers that can go into it other than just being a cool transformation.
And I know we've talked about this a little bit, totally underrated Wolf with Jack Nicholson and
Yes.
vintage age Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, white, I don't think I have to say anything else to sell that movie. But what I like about Wolf is Wolf almost sells being a werewolf as like a type of empowerment. Like he's kind of a nebbish with a loser of a life until he becomes a werewolf and then he becomes a badass that gets Michelle Pfeiffer. Say no more. So that's an interesting take too.
Yeah, no, that movie came up on our last episode, and I definitely want to see that one. But yeah, there's a lot of there has been a lot of werewolf movies in the past, but I feel like they're sort of a rare occurrence in horror these days. We don't get a lot of werewolf stuff anymore, which is
No.
unfortunate. I actually also was digging through my DVDs yesterday to look for something that I had to watch for a different episode, and I came across like a $10 Stephen King collection DVD thing that I bought, and
Oh yeah.
Silver
Silver
Bullets in
Bullet.
there, and I've been meaning to watch that one too.
I mean it's got layers of cheese on it, but it's
Yeah.
kind of interesting. It's kind of entertaining in its own way. Yeah.
I'm good with
I
that.
like that.
So,
I like that.
but obviously there's been werewolf movies many times before that. If you go all the way back to 1941 with the original Wolfman, and then the shit ton of Universal Monsters movies with Wolfman. But I feel like this one, American Werewolf in London, is just one of the pinnacles of werewolves in pop culture. Like, many people who don't like horror know this movie. So I gotta ask you, what is your backstory with American Werewolf in London? When did you first see this?
I was a kid in high school. I remember I took my platonic friend slash sometimes girlfriend Lisa Spires to see it, and we both thought it was fantastic. And I think I know I saw it at least one other time in the theater. I remember when my wife and I first got married, she didn't like horror films, and I think American Werewolf was the first movie I used to like bring her over to the dark side. She absolutely loved it as well. So
That's a good.
it's an all-purpose, and if I can give a slightly more complex answer, I get accused in some of our movie circles as being the guy who only likes the movies that have subtext, and that's there. It's true to an extent that I like when a movie has subtext, like you were talking about Invisible Man in the last podcast, and there's a lot going on in Invisible Man that's not just about a guy being invisible. But one of the things that I've always loved about American Werewolf is I would argue to the death it is subtext free. It is just, hey, we're gonna have fun for 2 hours, and you're gonna watch this guy turn into a werewolf, and it's gonna be badass. And I love it for that. I love it for just being what it is.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've never really thought about that. There's not. Now, I know there are elements of the movie where people I've heard dive into some subtext a little bit, with like David being Jewish and like the weird Nazi werewolf
Yeah, the
dream.
zombies being Nazis. I think it's I mean, there's stuff there, but I don't think any of it is meant to be like the driving force of the movie. And I also would make the argument that, as much as, David is, well, I can actually argue David is not the hero of the movie, but David is our central figure in the movie, and he's kind of a dick. He kind of like how Scrooge waits until he sees his name on a tombstone, even though he's seen three ghosts prior. He waits till he sees his name on a tombstone before he actually changes and begins to be a good person. David does a lot of shitty things to people before he finally kind of, well, and actually, he really kind of never does take responsibility for himself. But I'm getting ahead of myself.
No, it's all good.
Sorry.
Yeah, I can't quite remember when I first saw this, but I remember getting into horror and this being a name of a movie that people came up that were saying I should watch this horror movie or that horror movie. This one was one that came up a lot. And I think there's a lot of reasons why, which is something, this is probably where I want to start, is just the reputation of American Werewolf in London. Again, I probably saw it when I was a late teenager or something. And I mean, it was love at first watch. Like
Exactly.
this is a pretty flawless movie in my mind.
I agree. I agree.
But the reputation, like you brought up something with, you were talking about this was the movie that kind of got your wife to like horror movies, and I think this is a perfect gateway movie into horror, and I think that is probably a good place to start. Is why do you think that is? Because one thing to note about this movie is it's very much listed as horror comedy, and that's something I just watched this the other night to prepare for this, and that's something I kind of want to dissect is where do you see the comedy aspects pop up?
It's interesting, this rewatching, I'm always struck by there's three comic beats that I really love. One is, first off, anytime Jack is on screen, Griffin
Yeah.
Dunne, who's done a lot of other stuff, but I mean, Griffin Dunne, if he's remembered as an actor, I think has to be remembered for Jack, because he becomes the favorite, your favorite part of every scene that he is in.
Yeah.
Alive, dead, somewhere in between. I mean, he's always the best thing about the scene that he's in. And then I love the little kid that just says no to everything. I mean, what a weird little beat to just put in a movie that doesn't belong there in any way, shape, or form. But it's just kind of funny that every time Nurse Alex comes back to the little boy, it's always a conversation that ends with the boy going no repeatedly. And then, but I think the other great comic beat is the physical comedy of the screw up cop. They have the great buddy cop duo, and one is straight, and then the other one is the foil, the goofball. And I mean, that's like they're bringing like Monty Python levels of physical comedy in the middle of a horror film. I mean, when he drops all the not urine specimen, you know what I'm talking about, when he drops all the metal spittoons and has to pick them up and try to rearrange them. Every scene that guy is in, he humiliates himself somehow, and it just
Yeah.
gets funnier and funnier each time he's on screen. So that's what I look at. And then, you know, a nude American boy stole my balloons. I mean, you know, it's by John Landis, who at that point was famous for, you know, National Lampoon movies. That was kind of his first foray. I think he had done Blues Brothers 2 years earlier, had done Animal House maybe 4 years earlier. So he was very much grounded in that kind of like late 70s, early 80s kind of frat boy comedy. So that, and I think this is, he even says this is his best film. I think this is his best film. I think it's his funniest film.
Yeah. And I think for me, I'm right there with you with Jack being a large reason why there's so much comedy. His
Yeah.
interplay with David is just top notch. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like there should be this serious tension where Jack is talking about being dead and has to roam the earth as a living dead person before
right.
until David is gone. And, you know, he's like, have you ever talked to a corpse? It's
Corpse is
boring.
boring.
Like, it's fantastic.
And beyond that, when they have the final meetup with all of the victims, and you know, some of the victims are just super cheery and helpful, like, you can hang yourself. Not certain enough.
Yeah, the conversation in the porn theater is
yeah.
ridiculous.
Yeah,
but
so great.
Yeah, it's there's a lot going on, but when this movie wants to crank up the fear, it really does it well.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I know you said you had some production notes you wanted to go into. Was that all of them,
well,
or did you have anything else
you
you
know,
wanted
I
to?
Know, I've heard some of your production notes on other episodes, so I can't tell you, like, you know, how much it grossed or how much it cost or whatever, but I
yeah,
can
yeah.
tell you that John Landis wrote the outline for it when he was 18, and he was working as a production assistant on The Dirty Dozen.
Wow.
He hung on to it for X number of years. Was it Paramount? I forget which. I think Paramount were the producers. They were really pushing him to put Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi in the roles of David and Jack, which I don't think would have worked at all, because they just were worried about Landis making a movie that didn't have like market value Saturday Night Live cast members. And
yeah.
Thank God that didn't happen. Let's see, what's some of my other production stuff? Sorry, bear with me while I dig through my notes.
You're good, you're good.
Rick Baker, they created an Oscar category for this movie. Rick Baker got Best Makeup and Special Effects Awards, which is an Oscar category that did not exist prior. And then when I did a little looking at that, part of the reason that they created the category, well, they created the category in part because this movie came out so early in the year that it was released that they had time, and the transformation effects got such a huge reaction that they wanted to kind of get ahead of it. But the other part is because the previous year there had been no such category for The Elephant Man, David Lynch's film The Elephant Man, and there was a lot of backlash, and there was some controversy about, you know, my God, look at these effects. Why are they not awarded in any way, shape, or form? So even, you know, RIP David Lynch, but
yes.
David Lynch, you know, moved and changed everything. That's just who he was. So
yeah,
even
for
affected
sure.
That.
We talked about that on the last episode. He was a trendsetter for sure.
Yeah. Oh, and some about the music. When he and Alex are going at it in the shower and then in the bed and then in the bed and then in the bed and then in the bed, that's to Van Morrison's original version of Moondance. They actually wanted to use Bob Dylan's cover of that song, but Bob Dylan in 1979 went through a very short period of time where he decided he was a born-again Christian. He released an album called You're Gonna Have to Serve Somebody. And because of his newfound religious beliefs, he wouldn't release the rights to them using his cover, which is why the original Van Morrison version is in the film instead.
Huh. Well, that's something we're definitely going to talk about because this soundtrack is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it really is.
I love
and
that
the
every
CCR
song
song,
is like moon and...
The CCR song that is used, there's a little trivia there too. John Landis, one of the next films he did after American Werewolf was he did the interstitials and a segment of the Twilight Zone movie where he again used a CCR song, Midnight Special. If you've ever seen Twilight Zone, it begins and ends with Albert Brooks and Dan Aykroyd in a car. And they want to turn on the radio and, oh, I love Creedence. And then they play another song. So clearly John Landis is a Creedence Clearwater Revival fan.
Yeah.
And I have to say, as a Warren Zevon fan, the one thing that I'm stunned by is that he didn't use Werewolves of London. I mean, it was right there. So I don't know. I couldn't find anything about why that was the case, whether or not Landis thought that was too on the nose or whether or not Zevon, who was going through a lot of drug issues, then maybe could not be reached for comment or consent. I don't know, but that always surprised me. Even when I saw it way back when, I thought, surely if they're using these other these other moon songs, they're going to end up using that. They didn't.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, one other, not really a production thing, but one other just like fun fact that I always think about with this movie is this and The Howling, the original, were released in the same year.
Yeah.
And there's often a debate who has the better transformation, The Howling or American Werewolf in London. Do you have any thoughts on that?
American Werewolf in London. And in full disclosure, and I'm not proud of this fact, I've never been able to make it through The Howling.
Really?
And I love Joe Dante, I love werewolves, I love almost everybody that was in that cast, but for some reason I've never been able to make it through that film. It bores me for some reason. Maybe
Interesting.
Because I was coming off having seen this. I don't know.
Interesting.
I should go give it a try sometime, but I haven't tried to watch it in years.
Yeah, no, I've not seen it yet, but Mama Midnight and I were talking about that, and she's like, wanting to watch it because she was like, looks pretty good because it's got Dee Wallace in it, and you know, it's got another great werewolf story.
Tom Atkins from Season of the Witch.
Oh, hell yes.
And again, I love Joe Dante. It's very rare for me to say, oh, there's a Joe Dante movie that I don't like, but for whatever reason, I couldn't get into that.
Yeah. Now, after the original, do I want to sign on for like the other 8 sequels that came out
no,
of it?
No. And Joe Dante would tell you no. And Joe Dante would add the disclaimer that he had nothing to do with any of this.
Yeah. But that's just always something like there's in some cases there's Team Howling or Team Werewolf in London. So that's always interesting to think about, which I have seen at least the transformation of the Howling, and it's a good one.
Yeah, I've seen the transformation. I agree, but it's not what Baker did.
Now, another thing with this too that I never remember quite clearly what the connection is, but so with the Thriller music video,
Michael Jackson loved this movie.
Okay, so this was
and
an influence on him.
He went to John Landis and said, "I want to be turned into a werewolf in my music video. Come direct
okay,
it. Yeah,
gotcha. Yeah, because they use like exact sound effects from American Werewolf in London.
Right, the transformation is kind of similar. Definitely, the end result.
Yeah,
is very similar. In fact, Rick Baker may have done the effects on the Thriller video as well.
I
I
was
don't
gonna
know.
say if it
Yeah,
does look very
certainly looked
similar
like
now
it.
that you're saying
Yeah.
that, so I almost want to Google if Rick had
Yeah.
anything to do with that. But yeah, so I think with all that, I think it's a good time to walk through this plot. I already said in my, and we can just go through notes as we see fit and
Sure.
just, chime
Sure.
in where you have notes on the, I forget, did you have to rewatch this or did you choose to just because you
I
love the
chose
movie?
to rewatch it just because I wanted it fresh in my brain before we did this. So,
Sure. Because I
but
remember you
yeah.
texting me being like, I don't need to watch it, but I will watch it.
I will say, remarkably, it is not one of the movies that I can just sit and quote without it even being on. For some reason, The Departed is a movie that I could just start reciting the entire movie to you right now. I'm not quite there with American Werewolf, but it's also, not always a script-driven movie anyway. So,
Sure. Well, let's walk through. My first
all
note
right.
just says amazing soundtrack still, and I don't even remember what
Yeah.
song was playing at the beginning of the
Blue
credits.
Moon. It's the slow version, like the ballad version of Blue Moon, by some doo-wop group. I don't remember who. The Moon. Maybe the no, not the Moon Glows. I don't know. Some band that was already old by the time I saw this movie. Because again, disclaimer: I'm older than the rest of the people listening to this podcast, but I'm not so damn old that I knew what some 1950s song was. So.
But yeah, as soon as you said doo-wop, I was like, okay, that's got to be like a 50s
Yeah,
group.
it was the 50s. Yeah,
I
I like that when that song is playing, you're literally the opening shot is of the Moors.
Yes.
And what do we know about the Moors, people? You say off the Moors.
Yes.
So that's some foreboding right there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I also have a
Yeah.
note that just says, "What? Frank Oz?" And like obviously there's the Muppet clip in there, but also he plays a character in here.
Yeah, these tips today don't appreciate anything.
Is this
Yeah,
the guy that was wanting to interrogate him?
no, it's the guy who was from like the American consulate,
Oh, that's right.
and the
Yes.
doctor introduces to him briefly. And my note on that scene, which I love, was you can tell how much less emotionally open we were back in 1981, because the doctor's way to prep him that his best friend that just died is, David, I want you to prepare yourself.
Yeah.
Jack is dead.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah, it looks like.
Thanks for that easy letdown
Oh yeah,
there.
this doctor's great, but he's also an asshole.
Well, I could almost argue he's the closest thing to a hero the movie has, because
Yeah,
he's the
no,
only one
he
that seems particularly interested in making sure no more mayhem happens.
Yeah,
So,
in retrospect, like rewatching it, he's definitely like the Dr. Loomis of American Werewolf in London.
yeah. I mean, compared to his fellow countrymen who were like, "Nah, just go out, guys. We don't want you in the bar."
But we're introduced to David and Jack. They're riding in the back of a truck with sheep in it. And they Jack very funnily Jack and David both say hilariously, "Bye girls," to the sheep and like, "I'm gonna miss you." And then the
And
I think
another
it
four. Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry. I keep stepping
Oh,
over
you're
you. I don't
good.
mean to.
I think it's Jack that just goes, "The sheep shit on my bag."
I also like the foreboding that even the nice guy who has dropped them off tells them stay off the moors,
Yes,
which I
yes.
think is kind of a hint that everybody that's anywhere around East Proctor knows that there's something hinky going on, knows that there's danger afoot, and you have to conduct yourself a certain way. So I thought that was
Yeah.
interesting, since the guy's not from East Proctor, doesn't even stop there, just lets the guys off. So.
Which I do love that there's really no explanation as to how the werewolf thing started there. I love how they're just like, "Don't go on the moors. There's something wrong
Yeah.
with this place," and that's
Yeah,
it.
yeah, yeah.
You know,
It's sort of like,
there's no weird curse or backstory as to how it started. It's just there's something
right.
wrong with this place.
Yeah. And having grown up in a small town in the middle of Appalachia, this really connected with me when I saw it. I remember thinking at the time, Oh, so there are Jackson, Ohio's in London or in England as well. Because that kind of closed off thing of this is our business, we don't want interlopers coming in here, we're not going to share our secrets with anybody else. It's like, yeah, that definitely hit home with where I
Yeah.
grew up.
I
So,
also have a note in here that just says, how many years of foreplay is that? With Jack
oh,
and
yeah, with the,
David talking about Jack's crush back home.
Now, I did not think to go back, rewind, and look. The girl that Jack is talking about being, madly in love with, is she the same girl that he later says picked up some other dude at his funeral?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, that's cold. Whoever that girl is,
Yeah.
boo to her, bad girl.
Well, I mean, at the same time, they never actually dated, though. He's just like, David's like, you've known her since eighth grade, and like, you've barely spoken to her. And he's like, she's in love with me.
But had
Like,
she known that Jack was going to die violently and tragically one day, maybe she would have thrown him a bone, is all I'm saying.
yes. But I also just wrote, I absolutely adore the setting of the moors in London. It's so like daunting to be staring out at these mountains that surround every aspect of this town.
And production note, that's actually Wales.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, everything that takes place in East Proctor is actually Wales. But almost all of the in-city stuff is London.
Gotcha. I was gonna say I would buy though that this is like rural London or like Ireland or something.
Exactly.
I also love
Exactly.
obviously they get to the slaughtered lamb, which is just full of great moments. I love when the bartending lady comes up at the lamb and says, we have spirits and beers. If it's something hot you want, you can have tea. Then you have tea. No.
No.
Yeah.
And she's the closest thing to a heart in that place. She's the only
Yeah.
person that, that is even, well, she's also the only female there, so that
Yeah.
might be a factor, but she's the only one that like is at all concerned that these young lads are going to meet their terrible doom. I think it's very telling. Again, I'm all about the foreshadowing. And as they step up and they see the sign for slaughtered lamb, it is Jack who asks where is the slaughtered lamb while the camera is on him because he's the slaughtered lamb.
Oh, I never caught that. Yeah, that's brilliant. But you talk about the like just the foreboding and the foreshadowing. Like, this is one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and it has nothing to do with the werewolf being on screen, just the shift in atmosphere in the slaughtered lamb
Oh,
when Jack asks about the pentagram.
You made me miss the
And
guy,
then yeah, you know,
guy with the
I've
nurse.
never missed that board. And then the two great lines of stay on the road, keep clear of the moors, beware the moon, lads. Just so bone chilling.
And then and now suddenly we are in a completely different state of mind as they leave that pub.
Yeah, and that the scene could be in danger of like, you know, droning on for too long, but the whole reason it stays that way is because Jack and David are just like, you ask him, while this one guy's telling a horrible, horrible joke.
Oh,
But
I had down written down here. My wife and I went to London last summer, and I actually had kind of my own slaughtered lamb experience. Luckily, it didn't end with me being slashed at the throat. My wife really wanted to go to Whitechapel to do a Jack the Ripper tour, and I have hearing devices that don't handle rain well, and it started to rain. So she said, and we didn't have raincoats, so she was going to go ahead and go finish the Jack the Ripper thing. I said, I'll find the pub next to where the tour started. Just come get me when we're done. So I went into Whitechapel pub, grabbed a couple Guinnesses, sat down. Everybody was really involved in some Olympic sport that was going on. I'd never seen rugby before, so I didn't know what it was. So I said, what is it they're playing? And you know how, like, when he says, what's the star for? And the room goes, like, I swear to you, the entire bar went silent and my chair squeaked and people turned around and looked at me like, you goddamn Yankee.
Now, did they
So
banish you from
they did not
the
banish me. There were no moors anywhere near Whitechapel and I'm still alive and well as far as I know. But I definitely felt that more when I watched this scene yesterday.
It is kind of a weird thing with the slaughtered lamb where like all of these people know that there's a werewolf on the moors and like They don't care to stop anyone from going out there. Do they just, and they say there's no food here. Is this just for them to get hammered so that they can not feel guilty about, like,
I think that's it. And the other thing that because I contemplated this very issue yesterday, and was because this always bothers me when we get to this. And I also thought, okay, if they're that close-knit, that's a community that probably only has 40, 50 people total. So whoever the original werewolf was, it was somebody who was beloved or important to somebody in that bar.
yeah.
So that would explain why they didn't just go out and, hey, we know there's a werewolf, so we're gonna go kill him. It was probably somebody's son or brother or
Yeah,
something,
true,
is the
true.
only thing I've been able to figure. And then the other thing I thought about that is, I'm so glad that this movie was made in 1981, because if it were made now, we would be, if it had come out last year, we'd be hearing about how Max is going to have an origin story for East Proctor. And we're gonna sit through the prequel origin story of how East Proctor came to have a werewolf or whatever. I'm
Yeah,
really
no,
glad
we don't.
we get to miss that.
Yeah, no, we don't need that. But the
No.
introduction of the werewolf really comes when Jack and David leave, and the first sign of it is the howls that the people at the slaughtered lamb hear, which is just spine tingling. I can't get over how good that effect is. And then when they hear it when they're on the moors, you're like, oh shit.
So this begins my point by point discussion, though, of why Jack isn't really, or why David really isn't the hero of the story. Because what does David do when Jack is being slaughtered? He turns around and runs tail. And then, now to his credit, when he gets 50 yards away, he says, "Jack," and turns around and comes back. But ding, there's my first indicator that David's maybe not the hero what's the Dark Knight story? Not the hero we
Oh,
was, but the hero we deserve.
Oh, so ridiculous. But dude, when the buildup of tension here with Jack and David just being like, let's just keep moving, and they don't know where the howls are coming from, and then like was it David falls and then the werewolf attack comes from the side.
Jack
And
help me up, and Jack reaches to help him out. And what a great jump scare. And I'm not a big fan of
yes.
jump scares, but that's a great jump scare.
And Jack's death is brutal.
And his screaming and calling to David to come help him. Yeah, it's just oh yeah, just really sells it.
The acting is fantastic. But then, yeah, so I forget, does David get bit or does he just get scratched?
When David comes back to try to intervene, he gets lightly bitten. I forget where.
Okay, I couldn't, the shot was quick, so I couldn't really tell, and I'm also getting maybe some influence from other werewolf movies, but I couldn't tell if he actually got bit or not.
And I hate to give notes to somebody like Robert Eggers, who was a great director, but Nosferatu does not appear in Nosferatu until 48 minutes into the movie. We're at minute 15, and the werewolf of American Werewolf in London has already appeared on the scene. I'm just saying.
This is true. This is
Just
true.
saying. Let's make our act one kind of short and get to the meat of it, so to speak.
Yeah, I just said Rick Baker showing his skills already with the makeup on the man who was the wolf that attacked them, with like his body retorting backwards.
And that the transformation, once he's been shot, the transformation is immediate, which is that was
Yep.
just such a cool, yeah, that was just such a great thing. I love that. I love
And
that.
then lots of great dialogue at the hospital. We get the introduction of Nurse Alex, who is just so gorgeous.
Dear God, Jenny Agutter, who prior to that, I had known her from a science fiction movie called Logan's Run, in which she wore a very, very short tunic through the entire. And so I was already in love with Jenny Agutter, but then when you see her in the nursing whites, let's just say that, like, just a few minute years later, I married a really beautiful girl who wore nurse's whites to work. And I'm not saying that Jenny Agutter was a factor in that, but I'm also not saying it wasn't. So,
Fair enough.
Jenny Agutter is one for the ages. She is
Yeah, no,
beautiful.
and she's a fantastic actress too. I love her character in this, and it's, so she has some fun interplay with David, where she holds his nose to feed him. And also, this is where we start to see some of the dream sequences that David has. Simple but effective, but David running naked and attacking the deer and the deer like squirming really caught me off guard.
I like that the dreams he starts to have are a slow build up, because the first one is really not much of anything, but then by the end it's like yikes, it gets really scary. But yeah, that's when that starts. And
And
then
then,
that's our introduction to Dr. Hirsch, potentially the hero of the story. And then not long after that we see the two cops and the Frank Oz cameos in the middle of that as well. So
but very unlikable in the beginning, the doctor with the "Don't you have a function that you do at this hospital? Maybe you should go do that," or whatever he says. But then another great nightmare sequence that also freaks me out still to this day is Alex checking on David when he's laying in a bed in the middle of the woods and his werewolf human hybrid face pops up.
Is that, I mean, any non beyond the werewolf images in that movie, I think the most iconic non-werewolf image is that his face. That's just, had I meant to go meet David Naughton when he was at Spooky Empire last year, and I was going to paint that image and get a selfie with him holding it, maybe get him to sign it, because that image has stayed with me for decades now.
Yeah, I
One
met
of my
him in
favorite
Ver
shots from the movie.
yes, for sure. And I met him in Virginia a couple years ago, and he was super, super sweet guy.
Good, good.
So yeah,
Glad to hear that.
if you get the chance to meet him anytime, definitely do so. He's very, very cool.
Well, if any of the Spooky Empire people are listening, then book him for Charleston again, please.
There you go.
We'll make him feel welcome, I promise.
Absolutely. But then, yeah, right around here is the first time that Undead Jack visits David in the hospital. And again, I have to note it, the makeup is just insane with the flesh hanging off of Jack's neck and just all the gashes open.
And like I said, I think I don't I think that's the I think shoot, I should have written it down. I think it's his second appearance. Does he make two appearances in the hospital, Jack?
He makes an appearance in the hospital, and later on, he shows up at Alex's apartment.
Okay, so there's only one. So the scene in the hospital is a great. That's when I like his makeup the best. When his throat is open, and apparently another production note, they when they shot that scene once, he ate the toast and a piece of the toast pops out of his neck. And
I kept looking for something like that to happen.
somebody decided that was a bridge too far, so they cut that scene out, but apparently it exists
Oh,
somewhere.
geez. I kept waiting for food to like fall out of the side of his throat. But he's got such great interplay with David, where David thinks he's dreaming, and like he's like, "Jack, you look horrible." He's like, "You're hurting my feelings." And
No, that's such a great scene.
then obviously we talked about the "Have you ever talked to a corpse? It's boring." But again, so funny, but so like foreboding with warning David of what's gonna happen to him.
Okay, I got to throw a theory at you about this. This is just my theory. I haven't seen anything on the internet. I'll be happy to put something on the internet and try to make this concept explode. But as I was watching that scene again, the Jack's hospital scene, it's something struck me as so familiar. And when I started thinking about it, and I checked this out with my son, who's also a nerd like us, and he agrees that I've got something here. There are a lot of similarities in the way that it's shot, in the way certain behaviors are moving and speaking. But I now wonder if Christopher Nolan was a big fan of American Werewolf. I couldn't find anything online to suggest that he is. But the scene in Dark Knight when Joker dresses as a nurse and goes in to torment Two-Face, there are some really weird surface similarities between that scene and the Jack scene, including, at some point David starts to sort of fade off on him, and Jack yells, "David!" And in the Dark Knight scene, Two-Face yells, "Rachel!" And then there's just like Joker's on the same side of the bed that Jack is on. They're moving kind of similar. They're going back and forth between being caring and concerned and then being ruthless. That's my pet theory. I'm putting it out there. If anybody wants to try to argue me down, then go ahead. Or if somebody wants to support me, let's make this a movement. Hashtag
All right. When I post this episode,
American Joker.
when I post this episode, I'll put that as like a teaser thing. Like, tune in to hear Robert's theory on the Dark Knight American Werewolf in London crossover.
It was our first sign that Robert had gone insane.
But then, yeah, no, I love that theory. I could see that. There's a scene in here that I completely forgot about until I rewatched it, which is the scene on the train where they're going to Alex's place and David is making the face
Oh,
at
the
the
phone
London
crackers?
box.
Yeah, the other thing I would say about that, now I'm a registered nurse in real life, scary as that might be. And I gotta say, first off, yay socialized medicine, because Jack was in the hospital for a good month after what was a relatively minor physical complaint. The little no kid, I think, is only in the hospital because nobody wants to take him home because he's so obnoxious and he only says the word no. But if you are going to wind up in a coma, you need to be hot enough that when you wake up, Jenny Agutter is so in love with you that she takes you home to her apartment. That is your coma goal. Hashtag coma goal.
I will say that this is like one of the quickest romances I've ever seen.
It is.
But you know what? That plays into the comedic aspect that, I mean, how long does this transpire? This is like he had been in the hospital for
It
like
would have
3 weeks
been
or
30. It would
something.
be yeah. It had to play out that way so that it had been 4 weeks later, so it would be time for the next full moon.
And then
So yeah.
about a week later is when the movie like ends. So insanity, but you know what? It's great. So
Oh
I
yeah.
won't
No,
knock it.
I won't hold anything against
I did get a
it.
chuckle. We talked about the shower and bed session with Alex's great line. Perhaps you'd like to watch telly whilst I take a shower. Smash cut to them making out in the shower.
And it's around this time. Well, Jack comes back, and my second favorite Jack scene when he picks up Mickey and says, "Hi,
Yeah, this is
and he.
probably Jack's most like frightening scene because this is him when he kind of looks like grayish, and this is when he's telling David he's going to change.
And even though Jack is still his friend and is still funny, do you also feel like he gets grimmer? Not just that he looks worse, but that he gets a little bit grimmer with each scene that goes on. I mean, he's certainly not the same guy from the hospital, or the same corpse
Yeah, I mean, I
from the
feel like he's
hospital.
losing his humanity to being undead, yeah.
All that boring talking to corpses is really starting to affect him.
I want to know what meatloaf David is eating, though, that he says, I will not be threatened by a walking meatloaf.
I don't know. My mom's maybe. I don't know. Now we're at the halfway point by this point, and this is when Dr. What's his face goes out to East Proctor.
Yes.
And first note that I wrote down when we got to the scene was, do these dudes ever work? Because Baldy, the head of the East Proctor Denial Club, he's sitting there, and Nervous Dark Guy is sitting there. And while I'm thinking of it, Kevin, what was the movie with J Lo where she beat up her abusive husband? That's enough.
Oh, shit.
What's that song by Mary J. Blige? That's enough.
Oh
What's the
shit,
Cassidy Hutchinson book called? That's enough. That's my favorite line from that. That's enough.
Oh
I
yes,
cannot
when
tell
the
you in my
when
lifetime how
yeah,
many
when the
times I have
bald
barked.
guy yells at the
That's
other one.
enough. Yeah, Baldy. Yeah. Baldy doesn't want any of the secrets being shared.
Yeah, no, I think they just drink because they're still at the Slaughtered Lamb when the doctor comes back.
Do you suppose they're sheep herders? I mean, what supposedly
I
dark guy leaves to go check on the sheep.
yeah, I took it as
So,
they are just kind of like farmers in this town that probably has like less than 100 people, like you said.
right. So they just, you know, hey, we'll stay in the pub all day.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's
I wonder how far the like that part of
north.
London is from where they are, where Alex is, like in downtown.
If it's, I don't think East Proctor exists, but I would imagine, I would imagine it's a pretty long car ride just to get to Slough, where the office, where David Brent's office is. So I'd say
Yeah.
it's pretty, I would say it would be the equivalent of like here to Orangeburg, maybe. Nothing,
Okay.
nothing. I'm not saying Orangeburg is East
Yeah,
Proctor. I'm not saying that they actively have werewolves in Orangeburg, but you know, I'm also not saying they
you
don't.
never know. But we've gotten a lot of foreboding about it, a lot of warnings about it, and
Oh
less than
man.
an hour in, we get the greatest werewolf transformation in cinema history.
Yep, absolutely.
When
Groundbreaking.
David transforms in Alex's apartment, and again, just playing over a very boppy, slow rock ballad
Yeah.
about moonlight.
Yeah,
And
yeah, yeah.
all I have to say about this werewolf transformation is just it just looks so great and just so painful.
Yeah. That
Like,
song, by the way, is a Creedence Clearwater song called Bad Moon on the Rise
yep.
or Bad Moon Rising. And when another production note, Landis, when they started this production, Landis looked at Rick Baker and said, I feel really bad for you. Because he said that I've created a scenario in this script that was easy for me to write, but it's going to be really hard for you to create. Because nobody had ever done this. Nobody had ever done a slow transformation before. I mean, just the detail of hairs growing and bones breaking and realigning and
So I gotta
is
say,
amazing.
like, for whatever reason to me, watching it this time, the hairs popping out of the skin was like the most irritating part where I'm just like, oh, that looks so uncomfortable.
I think for me it was when he falls over on his back. And
Yeah.
he's like helpless, like a, you know, turtle or
Yeah,
whatever. That just,
the
oh
hairs
man.
popping
Ooh.
out and his spine realigning.
Yeah. Now, if
Ugh.
somebody wanted to be a naysayer, they could say that the one flaw in this movie is that one hand has completely transformed and the other hasn't. But I say to them, shut up. And just be glad George Lucas didn't make this movie, because we
Yeah.
wouldn't even have the original edition. We'd now have some godforsaken edition where he went in and put droids in the background and fixed the hand that wouldn't transform. So I'm perfectly happy with this being what it is, warts and all. So.
I know some, I think I've seen some people complain about like the snout extending. That's like the one part they say doesn't look good, and I disagree. I still think it looks fantastic. But actually, one of my favorite shots of the werewolf is right before they cut, like after his snout extends and they get the close up of his eyes, they zoom in on the werewolf just kind of like lifting its head and letting out a little bit of like a roar, and then it cuts to his legs and they won't show you the full wolf. That's probably my favorite headshot of the werewolf is that little like howl right before the transformation is finished.
I hear you. I hear you. And then they don't they immediately then cut back to Alex for some reason? I mean, one of the things I was struck by watching this yesterday was how smart they are sometimes at getting you revved up in a scene like that and then just cutting away for a second to non-action and
Yeah.
then cutting back. I feel like there was a beat between when the transformation happens and when the killings start. I may have just
Yeah.
imagined that, but I thought
Yeah,
there
they
was such a thing.
well, because they've been cutting back to the doctor and Alex trying to phone her apartment to see if David's okay.
Gotcha.
But it's quick because then the first night massacre happens.
Oh, so great.
I mean, from this point on, man, the movie is just go, go, go. The pacing's been perfect up to this point, and now it's just let's have 45 minutes of werewolf fun. And
I always think of this scene as, you know, you're on the roller coaster, you've clack, clack, clacked up to the top of the hill, and this is where you start to go down.
Now
And this is just so great.
what is your favorite of the attacks on this first night?
The Tottenham Station murder.
Yeah.
I'll have you know this isn't the least bit funny. And again, while I was in London this summer, I made a point. Well, we were in and out of Tottenham Station multiple times because we used the tube the entire time we were there. And Tottenham is a pretty good artery from one part of London to another. But I actually made my wife go up and stand at the top of the escalator when we were there late at night, and I went down and laid on the bottom. And I have that picture somewhere, and I'm going to edit a werewolf into it, and
Was gonna say
I'm going to bring it to Midnight Terror someday.
you gotta get a you gotta get a werewolf crawling on all fours, which is one of my favorite shots in the movie, is just that slow, quick reveal of the werewolf coming into frame from the
Exactly.
escalator.
That they've waited that long and it's from that far away and it's just that little piece, but it's enough to sate you until we get to it. But when you talk about tension, there's just something about that entire sequence of that poor guy, thinking somebody's playing a prank on him, and then it quickly escalates to he's running through. And there is no manipulation being played. That is what the London tubes are like. You're
Yeah.
going through twisty, windy little tubes where sometimes you can't see 20 feet in front of you, etc. And the collision with which that poor guy throws himself on the escalator and his attaché case smashes open and all of his papers fall out. That's just, oh, it's such a great scene. It's such a great
Yeah.
action scene, such a great tension scene, and then ending the way it does. And thank God they didn't. I feel like today somebody would feel obligated to then keep that scene going so that you could see the guy get massacred. But we don't
No.
need that at that point. We've already gotten all the scare we needed
No,
out
a
of that
bite on the
pursuit.
neck is what
So,
we get a lot of the time, and that's plenty. Yeah, you mentioned it
What
earlier.
is that your favorite, or what's your favorite from the?
My favorite, I'm stuck between the cheery couple around the apartment building or the homeless men.
I think the only issue I have with the cheerful couple is one of my great pet peeves for slasher movies is always the girl that even though she knows four of her fellow campers are dead, she walks into the room and says, "Tommy, is that you? This isn't
Yeah.
funny." And the husband actually does that to whoever the host of the party or whoever it is he thinks is, "Harry, is that you?" And I'm like, "Oh, come on, dude. You're not a co-ed camper in a
Well,
Jason movie."
I mean, to be fair, there wasn't a lot of slashers just yet. This was 81.
No, they were coming along though.
So we were two Friday the
Yeah.
13th movies deep.
So maybe they were the first one to do that. Maybe they get to claim that. I don't
Yeah, we hadn't gotten to Friday Part 5
know.
yet, the best Friday the 13th
Right,
movie.
right, right.
I laugh about that every time because me and Charlie still have a debate about which one's better, part three or part five with Friday the 13th.
Three.
Oh.
Three, because I was 18 years old and I was inebriated, and we watched it in theater with the 3D glasses on, and then I went home with a cute girl. So definitely three. And you made me watch five at Terror Vision, and the answer will always be three. And Charlie is correct. The
Oh.
answer is
I
three.
mean, to be fair, I didn't make you watch it. We met up.
I'm going to get kicked off this podcast. I can just
Yeah.
feel
And recording right here.
So
But
then are we going to go to the smash cut to the zoo, or was there anything else we want to say about
no,
this
I
movie?
mean, I think yeah, this night of massacre is just a lot of fun.
Oh.
And then yeah, smash cut to the zoo with him in the wolf exhibit.
Naked David, which, another production note, they fed those female wolves, or what were they, wolves? What was he
They
in
were
the,
wolves, yeah.
they fed them prior to that. He was in there naked, and he had, like, that was a practical effect in 1980. Was not, "We'll do this with CGI, or we'll have plexiglass between you and the wolves." It was, "Try not to anger the wolves while
Yeah.
you're acting." And
Yeah,
he said it was the most terrifying thing he'd ever
while you're
done.
naked too, yeah.
And you're naked. And then
Like,
Balloon Boy, that I already mentioned, that I love that weird
yeah,
little
a
part.
naked American man stole my balloons.
And I gotta say, I think I'm 98% hetero, but David really rocks the red coat. I mean,
He
I was
does.
kind of digging. I was kind of digging his look. The barefoot, bare legs, red coat. Yeah,
Yeah,
I think
no pants
he
and
kind of
fancy
worked
red
there.
coat. Yes, no shoes. I do love Alex's reaction of, "Where did you get that coat?"
Now I love that as soon as she gets him home, clearly werewolfing makes you horny because he's already ready to go again.
Yeah.
Whereas she's like, I've been worried about you. You've been out all night." And he's like, "Hey, what are you wearing?"
Well, again, that also leads into more like horror comedy balance where like the doctor's trying to have this serious phone call with her and he's just macking on her the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
And then like she can't even walk down the street without that. And then also I do love his attempts at trying to get arrested later on
Yeah. The queen
with
is a
his.
man.
Yeah, the queen is a man. Shakespeare was French.
I
Oh yeah, that was one of the last
didn't
things he yelled. He yelled Shakespeare's French, and
Shakespeare's
I was
French.
laughing
That's
hysterically.
hilarious.
And then we get to just another absurd, funny scene, which is him meeting Jack in the porn theater.
Oh yeah. Well, but before that, don't we have the scene in the red box where he calls home?
Yeah, we did. Oh, that scene was
This
like heartbreaking.
boy, that's not, I mean, Jack stole most of the scenes he was in. But man, Naughton's acting with that. I thought it was such a wise writing choice to have the annoying little sister be the one that picks up,
Yeah.
because he's going to have a completely different dynamic. I mean, it's still loving, but he has a completely different dynamic with her than if it had been mom or dad
Well, it's a
that picked
challenge
up the
too
phone.
because
I really love that.
he has to like keep his composure even more as opposed to if
Yeah,
he was talking to his mom and dad.
right, exactly. I love that.
Now I didn't understand. So he makes that phone call. Does he try to off himself after that?
Yeah, he pulls out a knife and he's going to cut his wrist, but he didn't have the guts to do it
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
because again, David is not the hero of this movie, people.
The hit.
He keeps putting people at risk and making bad decisions because he's afraid to kill
The hero is
himself.
the guy that storms into the apartment in the porn movie that they're watching with his it's like, I just thought
Okay.
you would never do this again. I don't even know you.
I've got a great production note, but I wanted to say one thing about the red box, the red phone boxes.
Okay.
Red phone boxes have not been operational forever because, we live in a cellular age. They have now become unwitting public toilets if you are ever in London.
Oof.
You do not want to, people think, oh, if you want to take a picture with a red phone box, do it outside the phone box. There's actually one or two that are pretty close to Big Ben that they actually keep locked up, and then they have someone patrolling them so that if you want to do a selfie inside them, you're going to get in one that's not molested. Although I'm hearing that the ones that have become unwitting urinals, that there's a claim, they're trying to do a thing now to sort of reclaim those and turn those into like emergency medical boxes and whatnot, like put AEDs and that sort of thing in there. There's a movement going on to try to do that, but yeah. Oh, and you mentioned the porn movie that they are watching is See You Next Wednesday, which is a play on words. And I was really fascinated. I was sorry to know that I was not aware of this. John Landis has put the fake film See You Next Wednesday in almost all of his films.
What?
It's in either a clip from it, or a poster for it, or an advertisement for it. See You Next Wednesday exists in Blues Brothers, Trading Places, Coming to America, Spies Like Us, and a handful of others that I didn't bother to write down. And the interesting thing is, because this is a running joke that he has had since he was in college, a movie called See You Next Wednesday. And so the other thing is, it's not always a porno film. Like, it's only a porno film in American Werewolf. In other movies, it's like an action movie, it's a comedy, it's a romantic comedy, et cetera. But yeah, he has kept that gag going
That's
through something
awesome.
like 10 films, which I had no idea that was the case, but that was interesting to me. Yeah.
Yeah, no, the dialogue in the porn movie "See You Next Wednesday"
Yeah.
is so funny with just
Not
the
you.
yeah This girl and a guy getting it on, and then this older guy comes into the apartment and goes, "I thought you were never gonna do this again." She's like, "I don't even know you. I've never seen you in my life." And he's like, "Oh, sorry."
Oh, and John Landis and his team filmed. They made their own porno, like they
Oh,
made that
lovely.
like not a genuine porno. Although apparently the girl from that fake porno film then went on to have a thriving British porn career
Oh, wow.
as a result of having been in a fake porn. So that was kind of
That
I
is
didn't
some
get her name. I didn't write down her name, but yeah,
serious dedication, is to make a movie that's going to
right?
be in the actual movie that you're making.
Right? And it's like that would make for an interesting IMDb page, I
Yeah.
think.
But it's a quick wrap up, because then I mean, obviously this is where Jack meets, or David meets, all of his victims.
Yeah, the victim roundup. Yeah.
And they talk about different ways for him to end his life, which is like super disturbing and then played for humor at the same time.
Right. Yeah. No, there's a lot going on there. And
Yeah.
again, again, my theory, David is not the hero of this piece.
No.
David's even still kind of dicky about it. Oh, you guys are being so helpful. It's like, well, they wouldn't be sitting here dead if it weren't for you, David. So I think they've earned the right to tell you how to off yourself. But
Yeah.
just
I
me.
do love the cheery couple, though, with like the big smiles on their
Yeah. Yeah.
faces.
Yeah.
That's just an
Please, Denise.
absurd shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it's a quick wrap up. Another note I
Yeah.
have is the background noises for both times that he transforms are fantastic. There's the Creedence Clearwater Revival song, and then porn
Right.
sounds.
Yeah.
For there's just moans going on when he transforms the second time in the theater.
Right. Yeah. I think by that point, they were like, okay, we can't make poor what's his name do another transformation scene. A couple other production notes. John Landis, the next film that he did was The Twilight Zone, in which he did some kind of shady stuff that led to a couple actors being killed. And he really got raked over the coals for that, deservedly so. But that was always kind of striking to me because Landis actually does a stunt in the Piccadilly Circus scene. There's a guy in a red bandana that gets sideswiped by a car and crashes through a plate glass window. That's actually John Landis. When
Oh,
they were
wow.
filming, he when he was when they were filming, he wanted to show like his brotherhood with the stunt crew or whatever. So they rigged him up, and he actually did that gag himself. So I thought it was surprising and very sad a couple of years later when other people died under his direction, because I thought, well, he's actually risked his own life. So it's surprising that that happened. And then what? Oh, and Piccadilly Circus. Piccadilly Circus is like their equivalent of Times Square. It's always full. John Landis, the cops would not give him permission to shoot in Piccadilly Circus. And so he brought a bunch of food, a bunch of beer, and maybe possibly some illegal substances, and did like big screenings of his movies, like Blues Brothers, for the area cops. And as a result of all that, they had all this gratitude for all the love that he was lavishing on them. And so they gave him permission to shoot from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m.
Holy
in
shit,
Piccadilly Circus. So
that's a
anything that
quick.
you see in Piccadilly Circus, they had permission to shoot, I think, 2 nights. So that's a total of 4 hours shooting time in the dead of night.
Oh my
So
God,
that they got what they got is amazing.
that's incredible, 'cause I feel
So,
like we spend a lot of time in the circus area. That's
I mean, there's a lot
crazy.
of, yeah, it's a lot of mayhem in there too.
Well,
Yeah,
then,
no,
you
good
know,
call.
one of my last notes just said the werewolf in all its glory in the London Square Massacre.
Yeah, absolutely. And which, again, just like I'm glad there isn't an East Hampton Max show coming on, I was always so glad. I'm not somebody who I'm kind of at the point in my movie going life where I think franchise is a bad word. I think we've done too many things to death, and I'm happy with certain franchises would just die and we would get something interesting and new instead. But I've always been grateful that not counting the Paris thing, which had nothing to do, which wasn't a continuation of David's story or what, it was just another werewolf thing that
A
John Landis had
spiritual
nothing to do with.
successor.
I'm glad that they never followed up on some of the threads that they could have followed up on to make a sequel. Like, was Alex pregnant with a werewolf baby? Entirely possible. Did he bite anybody else who survived the Piccadilly Circus massacre, who then went on to carry on the werewolf curse, etc.? I don't want the answer to any of those questions, but again, in our franchise crazy culture, I could see how if that film were made today, if that film were made today, the producers wouldn't let David die, probably.
Yeah.
There'd be some magical last minute thing that saved him or whatever. But
Yeah.
I love that it was a one and done, that it's a beautiful film. I'll go to the grave loving this movie.
And that's a perfect wrap up. I think this movie's flawless. I never get tired of watching it. I've said off record, I don't know if I mentioned it on record, this isn't like my favorite werewolf movie, but it is the best werewolf movie.
What is your favorite werewolf movie?
Well, here's the thing. When I say best, I mean like this is the most well-made like setup werewolf movie. The one that I just happen to get the most enjoyment out of it is actually The Wolfman from 2010.
Okay, the one with Benicio del Toro.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I'll have to go back and look at that. On your recommendation, I will go back and look at that. I remember
And
seeing
again,
it once, but never going
it's a
back.
product of its time. It's CGI heavy, yes, but that's just the one that I get the most enjoyment out of for my werewolf story. And it's also like the one thing I will say that I like about that movie more than this one is this one's werewolf is essentially just a wolf. I kind of like the humanoid aspect of the OG Wolfman.
Like the pants still intact and the shirt ripped open, that kind of thing.
That classic like old-timey English suit wearing werewolf is like my favorite iteration of the Wolfman.
I grew up reading Marvel Comics, and there was a great Werewolf by Night comic book that was that kind of classic werewolf. So
Did
yeah,
you
I have a love for that stuff too. So
watch the film adaptation or not film adaptation, but like the special that they did of that?
oh my God, when they great, I didn't even think to include that in the other werewolf stuff that is great. Plus, not only that, but it has my absolute favorite Marvel character, Man-Thing. Is my absolute favorite Marvel character, and they did him proud. They did him and Werewolf so good.
See, I need to rewatch that because I wasn't really into it the first time I saw it,
Oh.
so I want to give it another chance.
Yeah, and if you can watch the black, well, watch both versions, but there's a black and white version. And my son and I had seen the color version. We watched the black and white version actually the night before Christmas, which is perfect. What else do you need? Santa's
Yeah, there you
coming, you need
go.
werewolves. But they're both beautiful. They're both
That's
wonderful.
awesome.
I'm sorry, can I know I'm lagging here. I have one last production note that I just want to get
Sure.
out, just because maybe I'm a little OCD.
Go for it.
The beginning of the movie, the song was Blue Moon, and it was like the slow, like sort of ballad version. Actually, the doo-wop version of that exact same song is what takes us out at the end of the film. And I thought it was interesting that he bookended it with two versions of the same song.
Yeah,
So.
this is such an abrupt, like bizarre ending. So Alex, distracts David and, the cops gun him down and he's killed. And then we just cut to this 50s like doo-wop song.
I mean, no, yeah. And there's something so sort of like matter of fact and brutal about that I always loved it. Yeah, it's like I mean, where else were you gonna? I'm glad there wasn't Alex cradling him while he dies or some such thing. It just that it's a werewolf. He's a werewolf. That you weren't gonna be able to have a last cuddle with a werewolf.
No. And
Yeah,
like
I love the brutality of that.
exactly. And she's just had her confession of love. And then like, nah, credits.
Exactly. Boom. We're done.
And
Leave the
so,
theater.
yeah, right. but I love this movie again. It's in my top 10 for sure. It's so great, and it's a recommend for anyone that whether you like horror or not. Like my mom 2 years ago was not that big into horror. This was one of the ones I showed her before going to a con because I was going to meet David Naughton, And this is one that she likes, so I think it's a great gateway horror movie.
Yeah. Your mom sounds amazing. I got to meet your mom at some point.
Have you
She sounds
not
great.
yet?
I have not yet. Just on Facebook.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, you'll see
Yeah.
her sometime soon. I'm sure she'll be at the next live event, I think. So,
Cool. Good deal. I look forward to meeting her.
but absolutely. But I gotta ask you as we end on here. I'm sure it'll have its own episode one day. The beast will have its day or absolutely the beast will have its day with this one. But American Werewolf in Paris, yay or nay?
I don't think I think I tried to watch it and I turned it off after 10 minutes. I mean, first off, it was a movie that if I sat when I sat down and watched it, knew I'm not going to like this. I'm just doing this for anthropological purposes. And I think I got 10, 15 minutes in. And I like Tom Everett Scott. I always liked that guy as an actor, and I like Julie Delpy, but I just, you know, I was like, why am I doing this? I got better things I can do for an hour, you know.
If you're going looking for American Werewolf in London Part 2, that is not it.
Yeah, no, I didn't figure it would be.
But
So.
it is enjoyable in its own right. But yeah, that's
Is
it
it?
for
So
our
you
episode.
did enjoy it. Okay.
I did. But again,
Yeah.
it's almost like guilty pleasure territory, how ridiculous it is.
Right. I
And
hear
the here's the thing, when they do decide to do a few practical werewolf effects in there, they're great.
you.
When they do the
Okay.
CGI cartoon werewolves, it is abysmal.
So a question I would have is at any point is a werewolf on the Eiffel Tower?
No.
Okay, that just seems like a missed opportunity to me. But
Oh, no.
if you're going to make a schlocky sequel to a great film, then at least put the werewolf on the Eiffel Tower.
Dude, the special effects in the werewolf modes are like Mortal Kombat Annihilation effects.
Okay, I gotcha. I
So,
gotcha.
yeah, they definitely didn't have the
Yeah.
budget to put a werewolf on the Eiffel
Right.
Tower.
PS2 cutscene
There you go.
coming up. Gotcha.
Absolutely. But that's it for American Werewolf in London, man. Thanks for
Cool.
joining me, man.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me. This has been an absolute treat, and I look forward to slash and burn in some other movie down the road. And I look
Absolutely.
forward
I
to
don't know.
everything that's coming up with you guys this year. It's going to be a fun year.
Absolutely, man. I don't know what you and I are going to do next. We've talked about a few things, maybe revisiting something that's been covered on the show to get your take on it.
Talk about maybe doing something that's not actually a movie, but was instead of monumental Netflix
Yeah.
horror series, which
One of my favorites.
I think needs to be discussed. I don't know how long that episode will be, but
Yeah, twit.
I'll have to zip my lip a lot more in that one because that'll be a long podcast otherwise.
Twist
So
my
I'll have
arm to get me to watch it again. Absolutely. It's one of my
to.
favorites. So
I want you to know, by the way, that the entire time we've been doing this podcast, I'm up in my art studio, and just before you called to start this, I had Twin Peaks: The Return on, and it was frozen on an image of the ailing old log lady sitting on the sofa with her log in hand. So I've been staring at the log lady the entire time we've been talking about American Werewolf. It seems appropriate somehow.
that's fantastic. But no, thanks, man, for joining me.
Absolutely.
You're welcome back anytime. I look forward to seeing you at all of the events coming up. And thank you everybody for listening to the Midnight Terrors podcast. If you want to get in
Yes.
touch with us, you can find us on Facebook under Midnight Terrors Podcast. You can shoot us an email at midnightterrorspodcast@gmail.com. You can find our link tree, Midnight Terrors Podcast, which has our T Public store on it. And also, you can join our Facebook group where you can talk with myself and Robert under Midnight Terrors Podcast about many things horror related there. And that's it. So we will
Give
see
us what you
y'all.
got.
Absolutely. And you heard me and Robert mention the live events. Our next one is February 28th, Love at First Fright at Frothy Beard.
Always fun.
Yeah, we're gonna have a good time with that one. We're talking about love and jealousy and killer couples and horror. So be there. And
I'm gonna say one thing since you brought that up, and I swear I'm gonna shut up and let you end this podcast. If you are somebody listening to this podcast and you've never come to a live event, if you're somebody who's just looking for some like-minded, incredibly inclusive, wonderful souls, I would urge you to come to any of the related Midnight Terrors things, also Charleston Absent Friends, any of the cool nerd horror or theatrical stuff that is going on here in Charleston. Go, be a part of it, participate. It is such a wonderful, warm crowd. When I am with these people, I feel like I have found a whole new loving community to spend my time with, and I've loved every second of it so far. So I hope to see all you newbies at one of these
Absolutely. That is chef's kiss, my friend. Thanks,
events.
everybody, for listening. We love y'all. We'll see you again soon. Peace.
See ya.